Hello, I'm Eddie Merckx. Welcome to the VeloCast.
Welcome to another edition of the VeloCast. My name is Scott.
And I'm John.
Well, coming up on this week's show, a Belgian dream team, hats off to Jonathan Vauters, more on mechanical doping, and we ask the question, which is faster, the car, the bike, or indeed the subway? But first, before we discuss the final outcome of the Giro d'Italia, let's have a look at what's happened since we last recorded a show. Well, HTC Colombia sprinter André Greipel, who had admitted that his Giro had been a disaster.
Aye, rubbish.
Absolutely rubbish.
He was in my fantasy team, he was rubbish.
We'll get to that later on. Finally had something to smile about on Thursday when he took the victory in Brescia.
Aye, and then promptly buggered off the next day.
He did, yes.
I thought this was Greipel's biggest chance to shine. I mean, we talked about before the Giro, the fact that Cav was going to California. He just didn't do it. You know, he's even though he won a stage, and not just because of this, you know, the fantasy team, this Giro feels like a real downer for him. You know, he could have written his CV for next year, and he hasn't.
Yeah, he was given the perfect opportunity. I mean, I was beginning to think that the Mark Cavendish had a voodoo doll of him, was sitting in front of a TV in California, maliciously sticking pins in it. But as you say, it's not been the best for him. That stage was more like the Columbia HTC we're used to seeing, though, very controlled throughout.
Absolutely, I've actually got a theory that he wasn't winning purely on aesthetic grounds. Because this is one of the most beautiful, as well as one of the best, one of the most beautiful Grand Tours I can ever, you know, I can remember watching. Mm. Small Italian towns, the Plan de Coronas. Basso's sister was in the telly yesterday, which is always a winner. And I think Greipel's just too ugly to be allowed to win in Italy. It just
affects their sartorial, you know, elegance, sense, rather. He said, I'm not a machine, but a human being. It's because I get sick 2 days before the Giro that I hadn't won a stage yet, but it was worth staying in the race. I had to wait a long time. We took the responsibility to chase the breakaway down with Sky, and at the end, Marcel Seiberg and František Rabo kept me in front and got a good position for the sprint.
Yeah, I mean, I think the difference between him and Cav is Greipel is incredibly fast, but he needs everything to be perfect for him. Cav can just, you know, win from virtually any situation. And it's that versatility that, you know, that makes him the most feared sprinter in the world today.
Mm, well, as you say, he disappeared from the race the day after.
Which cost me more points.
Not that you're bitter. And getting to that stage, an incredible stage 19 on Friday where Michele Scarponi was gifted the win by Ivan Basso and Vincenzo Nibali in exchange for the hard work the Italian had done to keep their three-man break away to the finish.
Mortirolo is brutal. I mean, it's just a brutal, brutal climb. And it was a joy. I mean, it was Scarponi always looked like he was in the edge of cracking, but worked like a dog. And as you say, although I think it's slightly cynical to suggest that he was, you know, sold the stage. I'm sure he won it fair and square. But his work was pivotal in essentially what won Basso the Giro.
Yes, and really the big talking point, which we'll come to in a minute, I just want to set up what happened. The liquid gas pair had attacked on the Motorola, as you said, and that's still 40 kilometres and another unclassified hilltop finish still to go. David Arroyo, who was in the pink jersey at that point, along with Cadel Evans, Carlos Sastre, and Alexander Vinokourov.
Tell you, he shot up in my... No, Vinokourov. Arroyo.
I was looking outside for flying pigs, yeah, there.
What a week Arroyo had. Yeah, what a heart.
Yeah, I mean, that thing, you know, wearing the leader's jersey in any Grand Tour, just suddenly you're riding with the strength of two men, and an absolute credit to the jersey he was. The talking point, though, came, I mean, descending skills from David Arroyo, which, as I said, Fabian Cancellara would have been proud of.
No, awesome.
Absolutely fantastic. Then there's him and Vinokourov set to chase down the leading trio.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what apparently happens is that David Arroyo, in the pink jersey, says, no, we're waiting for Sastre and we're waiting for Evans to catch us up.
Mm-hmm.
His thinking there, of course, is essentially...
Bigger group, more horsepower.
Yeah. Vinokourov takes the hump and decides, that's it, I'm not working for the rest of the day.
Well, there were two theories. That's the more believable of the two. The other one was that the team DSs had a wee chat, and Vino was being promised the following day's stage for not working. But that's a bit far-fetched.
Yeah, I mean, that's the first I've heard that theory, if I'm being honest, and that's more far-fetched than what I think.
Vino taking the hump seems far more believable to me.
And, but, you know, essentially, for me, Vinokourov lost the Giro that day.
Well, I'd already lost it, but,
but I mean, any
he certainly lost
had.
A few placings. Mm. But then again, in his mind, he'd gone into that race to win. And, you know, whether you're second or fifth, you still lost.
Mm.
You know, so his chance was gone, and I think he just took the huff. I think you're right.
Well, the stage winner, Michele Scarponi, said, I managed to keep up the pace when Basso forced it on the Monterolo. We had a common interest for the stage win and the GC. As soon as he had started thinking of getting the pink jersey, I started thinking of winning the stage. I'm extremely happy. Since the beginning of the Giro, I had a podium finish in mind. Now I'm fourth and I've never been so close to my goal, but I'm still not there yet.
I tell you, I made a kind of laughing comment last week about Basso looking pretty much as he did when he won the Giro for CSC. And quite a lot of people have been saying that, you know, reflecting on the fact that he's just back from his suspension. But that year, Simone called him an extraterrestrial in 2006 because he won a stage by, I think, 10 minutes or something. This year, the gaps were much closer and much more believable. So Basso performed really well, but it's within the bounds of credibility. Just a great race.
Or within the bounds of microdoping. Sorry.
I'm consciously trying not to be cynical this week. Come on. Work with me here.
Sorry, it was just an easy gag and I had to make it. We mentioned before that Andre Greipel had abandoned on that stage. Joining him were Danilo Hondo from Lamprey and Julian Dean of Garmin Transitions. Moving on to the penultimate stage of the 2010 Giro, which saw us in the high Italian Alps and the Passo Tonale, where B-Box Borgia Telecom Swiss climber Johann Schopp was a surprise winner.
Yeah, he was, but I mean, the climb of Tonale was nothing compared to the ascent of the Gavia, you know, the legendary climb, where in his last ever race as a professional, old Gibo Simone, you know, chapeau, well done, lad. I was actually quite disappointed with Schopp because he sprinted to
take
Prima Coppi.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's a young professional making his mark. So, you know, it's a cutthroat world. Who are we to say he wasn't right to not respect Simone's long, long history with the Giro? But the Gavia looked fantastic, you know, with names painted in God knows what in the snow. You know, snow ploughs had been through and the walls of snow were higher than the riders. It was just an epic stage.
Yeah. Good.
They were talking about cancelling the Gavia due to bad weather. Does nobody remember Andy Hampston, for God's sake? You know, a bunch of Jessies again. These modern riders don't know they're born.
Well, you say that just before they started, there was a doubt that they would actually go over that, and apparently they had
a wee bit of snow. Is it Kimmage who wrote about having to pee on his hands so he could work his brake levers on the descent of the Gavia that time because he was so cold?
Yeah, I think you're right. Yep. Violent attack from Cadel Evans, which shattered the group of favourites there, but nothing kind of came of that. Michele Scarponi tried to shake off the Liquigas duo of Basso and Nibali again. Nibali eventually buckling, conceding 18 seconds to Scarponi on the line and allowing Scarponi to draw within a single second of the third place on the GC, which set it up, obviously, for the next day.
I tell you, brave stage to pick for the second last day of a Grand Tour.
Brave, but immensely impressive.
No, brilliant.
And even again, then moving into the final of the Giro for this year, the individual time trial in Verona, where Gustav Erik Larsson from Saxo Bank was to take the stage, as Liquigas's Ivan Basso claimed the overall victory.
That's one of the most beautiful stage finishes I've ever seen. You know, the actual finishing line of the time trial was in the road outside the amphitheatre, But then to go through and the entire thing draped at pink and packed with people, fitting end to a brilliant race.
Yes. Larson put in a time of 20 minutes 19 seconds with Marco Pinotti of HTC Colombia finishing second and Alexandra Vinokourov coming in third.
I think you might have been right actually about Wiggo not being up to his best, because if he'd been using it as a training race, as I was talking last week, he would have had a good punt at this.
Mm-hmm.
And he was good, but you know, he clearly doesn't have the form he had last year in the Giro.
Somewhat worrying looking towards July. Larson himself said, "The race went well for me today. I just rode as steady as I could. When I watched Wiggins at halfway, I knew I had nothing to fear from him because he would never go faster than me downhill. But later on, I was really afraid of Pinotti. I don't know what it represents to win such a prestigious stage here. I'm just doing the one thing I'm good at," said Larson, in probably one of the weirdest post-race comments I've ever heard from a stage winner.
No, that makes very little sense at all.
Basso, of course, defending his lead with David Arroyo from Castapagna, holding on to second place, 1 minute 51 down, and Vincenzo Nibali from Liquigas coming in third at 2 minutes 37.
Just before we finish wrapping up the Giro, the theatre of the final stage is well summed up on a page of cycle tips, which is a blog from a bloke in Melbourne, and it's got photos by Cerotti, and they're brilliant. I mean, stunning photos.
Cerotti takes some cracking pictures. You'd see a lot of his stuff on cycling news and stuff.
Yeah, there's just one page which is just images of the amphitheatre and the time trial, and it's stunning stuff. It sums it up. And Basso's got the coolest podium shoes I've ever seen. Said he have made him a custom pair of white ones with a kind of grippy sole, which has been done for a few years, but they look smart. You could wear them outside, actually.
I'm never sure whether to take that as a compliment or an insult. Probably a combination of the two.
No, it is a combination of the two.
Right, so that was the 2010 Giro d'Italia. And before we move on to some other news this week, I thought it's probably a good idea to have a look back and wrap up our thoughts on how we felt this year's race has been. I mean, you mentioned it earlier, and I think we've mentioned it throughout. It's been probably one of the best Grand Tours I can remember.
My favourite since the 1993 Tour de France, which was Indurain and Tony Rominger. And the only heard of one, Zenon Yaskula.
There's a name. There's a name from the past. Wow.
Absolutely. Here, when I was coming across today, I saw somebody out on a bike in full MG Techno Gym kit.
I'm surprised that survived.
Like a time capsule.
Survived the wash over what, 20 odd years.
Yeah, but no, it's been absolutely brilliant. The Australians, what, three of the four jerseys? Chapeau, Richie Port, Matty White, and Cadell Evans.
Yep.
Just brilliant. So renaissance Australian cycling. I mean, it must be their most successful Grand Tour ever. Basso, you know, his sister's hot. I'm quite pleased he won. And day after day...
You can do a lot in life with a hot sister, but probably best not go any further with that.
Every day was a surprise. Every day was drama. It recalled, you know, old tours where men were men and sheep were nervous. I liked it. And I tell you, the Tour de France has got some standard to live up to.
It certainly has. I mean, the thing was, when that period, probably, what, about September, October last year, when the roots of all three Grand Tours were starting to be announced, we looked at the Giro and thought, oh wow, this looks absolutely fantastic. I think the word I used at the time was brutal. And it's lived up to it. You know, it's so often you see routes being announced and events we look at, and they never quite live up to the expectation of what they were supposed to be. But this has just been absolutely fantastic.
Here's the flip side, though. Old Jacques Anquetil's "They expect us to do this on air and water." We crave this kind of experience. We're part of the problem.
Yes, that is it. I mean, we've talked about that for a long, long time, that people demanding that kind of drama, that kind of effort from professional
athletes. 3 weeks.
For 3 weeks.
And this final week of the Giro, it was brilliant, but it was brutal is the right word. It was incredibly brutal. Having said that, Greg Lalonde says you can still ride these things clean. It just makes for more drama because you have dramatic failures. It's maybe possible, but you know, I don't care. Brutality's good. It's made for an enjoyable Giro.
Just a quick word on the final individual time trial. I think this is a brilliant... I mean, they did it last year as well. And just a quick note, you know, if Christian Prudhomme, if you're listening, I'm kind of getting a wee bit bored with the parade lap, you know, champagne on the Champs-Élysées aspect of the Tour de France.
It's not the first time they've done it. I mean, 89 was quite exciting in the Tour.
Yes, I know, but I think there has been...
No, I agree. It's really
dull. And now an established...
See,
yeah.
Until they see the Eiffel Tower, they drink champagne and ride each other's bikes.
Yeah, and it's kind of almost this unwritten rule of the Tour de France in the past, I don't know, 10, 15 years or so, that, well, you can kind of forget. The sprinters will get a wee run out on the Champs-Élysées, but... You can kind of forget
GC
the last
guys.
Day. Yeah,
no,
whereas
so
this
like.
Is fought to the end.
Aye, and the backdrop of the amphitheatre in Verona. And last year...
Wasn't ugly, was it?
Aye, last year the Colosseum, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So, an ITT to finish a race, great idea.
Yeah. Looking back, what's your thoughts on kind of individual riders or even just best stages?
Well, the journalists chose Cadel Evans as the rider of the Giro. And... I can't argue with it. You know, Basso won it, but Evans, I've never seen anybody fight as hard on a bike. He's done honour to the world champion's jersey, and he's shot up in my stature. You know, he's still in my stature, in my opinion, rather. He's still possibly the ugliest rider I've ever seen on a bike. But, you know, somehow it transcends that because there's, you know, there's a pureness to the effort that he puts in, which just demands respect. It just demands respect. Basso, impressive. You know, brilliant ride. And Leaky Gas as a team surprised me. They were far better than I expected them to be. Arroyo, fantastic. Disappointments? Well, Vino. I thought he looked far stronger in the first week than he turned out to
well,
be.
That was. I think there was some kind of grudging respect from us starting to build with Vino because at least he was putting the effort in.
Yeah, but then he showed he's a Sorry, I was going to try and not swear this one.
I mean, moment of the Giro for me, and I think, you know, there are certain times where cycling just produces these absolutely iconic images. And we had one this year, which was Cadel Evans wiping the rainbow stripes clean. Was it the Strada Bianchi stage?
I tell you, it's going to be hard to top that as an image all year. Mm-hmm. That genuinely brought a tear to my eye.
Mm-hmm. Okay then, the big unanswered question, I think is actually still remaining unanswered at this point, is how did your fantasy Giro d'Italia team fare in the Velo Games mini league?
That was crap.
Team bag of washing, I believe.
Absolutely, 80th.
80th.
Many of our listeners beat me, which just shows what a crap cycling pundit I am.
Yeah, I was about to say, folks, never listen to what this man has to say on Taxi Sitford again. He's a
Marcel
fraud.
Holt's team was 10th.
Oh, well done,
10th.
Marcel.
And she picked it with a needle, I think. You know, because girls know nothing about cycling.
Oh, no! It's the Ricardo Rico defence.
I tell you, I was quite proud of a few of the riders I picked, but my two disappointments were Greipel, who was rubbish, and Brad Wiggins, who didn't live up to my expectations. But I tell you, it's been fun. I was checking in and out every day. And there's a reason I'm not a DS of a Grand Tour contenders team, because I'd clearly be rubbish at it. But it added another wee dimension. You know, it's that social thing like Twitter.
Yeah.
It just brings a group of people together, and it's a wee element of fun to the race. So I'll be doing it for the Tour de France as well. I'm not scared of humiliation.
It's a brilliant idea. Anyway, we spoke about Ivan Basso's Liquid Gas team a moment ago, and the president of Liquid Gas Sport, Paolo Del Lago, has announced that Liquid Gas will continue to sponsor and own a team for 2 more years, and confirmed that both Ivan Basso and Vincenzo Nibali have re-signed with the Italian Pro Tour team for another 2 years.
That's hardly a surprise. I mean, advertising like they've got in the last 3 weeks has been priceless.
He says, we're happy to announce the renewal of our sponsorship. We think cycling is the best means to promote our brand. Which is good to see, you know.
Just like Amgen with the Tour of California.
Yes, Google it. It's good to see, given that there is certainly a fair amount of uncertainty over sponsorship and cycling teams.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about the Belgian super team in a wee while. And I think there is going to have to be some consolidation because, you know, we don't know how the Landeskate thing is going to play out, but that's going to have an impact on sponsors. And already has in some ways.
It has in some ways, yeah.
But you now need a shed load of money to compete in this sport. So it's good to see Leaky Gas committing. But as I say, it's an Italian company. Winner of the Giro, somebody as photogenic as Ivan Basso. It's got to be good advertising.
Yeah. Team manager Roberto Amadio was speaking about Ivan Basso and Vincenzo Nibali, said they're the two riders that represent our vision of athletes. They're the first two bricks that we've laid to rebuild the team so that we can remain one of the elite teams in cycling.
Well, Nibali's going to come forward and surpass Basso, I would think. You know, I mean, Basso's on top just now, but keeping Nibali on side, it's investment for the future.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Delago and Amadio also used the opportunity of the announcement to criticise the UCI's biological passport programme, saying that it was poorly managed.
People with better science than me are essentially saying that this whole microdoping and the protocols that Landis have revealed have made a farce of the biological passport.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that's a bit strong. I mean, as I say, it's one of the few protocols that I had some faith in. But, you know, I'm not going to get mired down in this again, but the timing of the Pellizotti case and the timing of the release of its information was a political move, you know, designed to maximise the exposure of the UCI. And I think they deserve criticism for that.
Yeah, the quote here is, if Pellizotti's case is archived, he will race with us for the Italian National Championships and the Tour de France. We'll have 15 riders at a training camp and the Passo San Pellegrino next week, and Franco will be there.
He's not going to get that Giro back.
No.
You know, it's gone.
It's gone, yeah. He's not suspended and still part of the team, Amadio said.
You had some classical pretensions this week, didn't you, on the blog?
I use the word, I'll accept the word pretension and the positive
I'm
rather than pejorative.
Don't be stepping on my toes. It was a good post that you did about the UCI. There needs to be some kind of oversight, because currently it's rife with nepotism. There are no real controls. There's an election system, which means it's almost impossible to oust someone who's performing badly. They make stupid decisions. Pat McQuaid opens his mouth, sticks both his feet in it, and as somebody said, I think only takes them out to shoot them.
Yes.
You know, something needs to be done about the UCI. You know, they've covered themselves in crap since this Landisgate thing. I mean, we've been going on at them since we started the Velocast, but they've just been a disgrace this last week.
Yeah, I mean, that's what has been the spur to. There's been like two or three blog posts that I've felt I've had to write, just essentially laying out my thinking as it's developed. And I think the first one was on why I think Pat McQuaid should step down. I think his position is untenable based on the way he conducts himself in interviews, the things he says, which have very, very little basis in logic, if nothing else.
Some of them don't have any basis in English.
Yeah, I mean, there's one actually I've got we'll talk about in a wee minute. But the second one, someone on Derek from thebike.ie commented on that initial post saying that he felt the entire UCI, it wasn't just Pat McQuaid, that the entire UCI was, as he put it, morally bankrupt and should be put into administration. And this kind of led me to write a post on saying, well, I don't know if putting the entire organisation into administration is going to be a benefit or a hindrance in the short to medium term, and maybe we need something like an ombudsman to oversee it.
Yeah, I completely agree. And as you can probably tell from my tone of voice, last week when I was talking about this, I was angry. You know, I was getting fired up. This week, I'm just disappointed and disillusioned. There needs to be oversight. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. Okay, rumour has it that Damiano Canego may be on the move from his current Lamprey team, with both Garmin Slipstream and Cervelo Test teams both being interested.
Well, Vochters has said openly said he's speaking to his agent, but denied any talks of transfer as yet. And Canego quite recently has, I'll be honest, he's slightly surprised me by taking quite a harsh anti-doping stance.
Yeah, this is the bit that kind of got me, because the link here,
because I always thought there was something of the human growth hormone about his head, but he's clearly just grown up.
The bit that kind of surprised me was, you know, Cycling News were suggesting this may be a good fit because of Cunego's very strong stance on doping. I mean, but I'm sure Jonathan Waters looks for more than that in a rider.
Probably not, actually. If he's a qualified top rider,
And that's kind of my point. He has to
be able to turn the pedals fast. I mean, that's the first thing.
Yeah.
I've always loved Kinigo as a rider. You know, he constantly surprises you. And it would be good to see him somewhere else, because he's been at Lampre pretty much since he was born. And it'd be interesting to see how he would perform outside an Italian environment. I think he'd be a good fit in Cervelo as well, actually. But apparently Lampre have got more money because the shoe manufacturer wants to step up in terms of sponsorship, so he might stay there.
Yeah, apparently it's Geox, Italian shoe manufacturer, and Bianna Reese has been looking at them. Because I think, as you say, they're a minor sponsor on Lampre at the moment, but Bianna Reese has been in talks because,
Reece
of course,
needs to find somebody.
He needs to really find somebody. So we've talked about this before, and I think there was an article a couple of weeks ago where, that was suggesting if Bianna Reese doesn't find a sponsor by the end of the Tour de France, then it really spells the end for that team.
Yeah, I think so.
Now, Quick-Step general manager Patrick Lefevre believes that the future of Belgian cycling lies in establishing one team with the top national cyclists. According to Lefevre, the way to do that would be to merge the two Belgian Pro Tour teams, Quick-Step and Amigo Farmolotto.
Is he just pissing in the wind, or is this actually something that's going to happen? Because as far as I can see, it's just Lefevre going, this would be a good idea.
As far as I could see from the article, it is just Lefevre saying this would be a good idea. I think really that then opens it up for other people to discuss.
I haven't said that. It's a good idea.
It is a good idea, yes.
That would be a lot of egos to manage. You know, how do you decide whether Philippe Gilbert or Tom Boonen or whoever gets?
Those are the two names that he mentions. He says, imagine Tom Boonen and Philippe Gilbert in one team. I dream of that now. Those two could win all of the spring classics. I don't know if I agree with that.
None of them, because they were fighting against each other.
Yeah.
He's right, though. What they need is a figurehead, and that figurehead has got to be Merckx. My second favourite rider of all time, the best rider of all time. Lovely man who introduces our show.
I have shaken that man's hand. Hasn't been washed since.
I would kiss it. I really would. Belgian cycling, it comes down to money again. It's what we were talking about. You need big bucks now. With Sky, Katusha, if you want to compete, you need the big bucks. And merging these two teams actually might be a brilliant idea.
Yeah, and we've talked before about how the traditional seats of power in cycling are and have moved from Belgium, France, Spain.
It would be great to see a team with proper national identity again.
Yeah.
Leaky Gas are Italian.
Are Italian, yeah.
And, I miss the days where essentially it was run along national lines, because the sport has globalised. It's one thing the UCI almost by accident have managed is to globalise the sport in terms of riders. So he might just be, talking at his bottom, but it's a good idea nonetheless.
So you would have Omega Quick Pharma Lotto Step? I think they might need to work on the name somewhat.
I think you need a catchy name.
Yeah, okay. We spoke of this a few weeks ago when he was first removed from competition, but now it would seem that former world champion Alessandro Balan is now no longer being withheld by his BMC Racing team.
Aye, and quite right. We said it was knee-jerk at the time. And it's good to see that it's their internal investigation which has made BMC bring him back into the fold. They're not just being the lapdog of the UCI or whoever. A lot of people have said it would have been good to see him at the Giro to give Cadel some support, because the one thing that was notable is if Cadel wanted support after moving from Lotto, he didn't get it.
He didn't get it.
There was nobody around him in the mountains. But then Balan wouldn't have been anyway. So, well done BMC. Well done. They've done the investigation. They've decided he's clean and he's back.
But he shouldn't have been pulled in the first place.
No, he shouldn't.
Well, we didn't think we'd be seeing the words Paris-Roubaix again this year, but the under-23 version of the event took place at the weekend, and it was the defending champion Taylor Finney who took the win in the famous Velodrome finish.
A lot of people really hate him.
I noticed that on Twitter, going, I dread
him dominating the sport. And a lot of it actually comes from, we berated Vino when he won Liège-Bastogne-Liège. But Taylor Finney went, waded in with both feet about dirty dopers and all that kind of thing. And a lot of people looked at that as hypocrisy when, certain people and teams associated with the under-23 Livestrong team might have connections with some form of doping. But, I mean, genuinely, I loved Davis Finney as a rider. Connie Carpenter, great rider as well. And we followed Taylor because he's a huge engine. You know, this is the amount of promise this guy's got is almost boundless. But suddenly everybody seems to hate him.
It did seem to spring from nowhere. Now, as I say, when the result came through and the tweets started flying in, I'm going, have I missed something? What's...
Well, the thing that got me, most of the congratulations were from the old school. You know, his dad, strangely enough, Armstrong. But most of the kind of younger fans were going, oh, I don't like this. I don't like this. Let us know. What's wrong with him?
Yeah. Answers on a postcard. He himself said, I was cramping coming into the velodrome and had to push through when Ben... Let's not go there. When Ben did all that work for me, it would have been just disgraceful to lose, and I didn't know if I could live with myself after all the work he did. All the rest of the team as well, they controlled it from the start. A great team effort and a hard day, but I'm very happy to come away with number two. Oh, we're so sorry. It's yeah. Okay. Let's very quickly move on. We've been scornful of the reactions that have come from certain quarters in the wake of the Floyd Landis allegations, but a breath of fresh air came in the form of Jonathan Waters this week. The Garmin Transitions DS said that all staff are expected to cooperate with all authorities in any anti-doping investigations and are expected to tell the truth, and I quote, whatever the truth is.
And that they've got a job if they do it.
Well, that seems to be the cut and thrust of this.
They have a position in the organisation, and chapeau. You know, this is the kind of attitude we need to move forward. I was actually moved. I'm a humble man. I very seldom tweet to celebrities, unless I'm trying to get an interview or something. But I was actually moved, you know, to tweet, well done, which I'm sure he really cared about, to be blunt. But this is exactly what we need to move forward. Almost an amnesty. Brilliant. Just brilliant.
Yeah, he said, we expect anyone in our organisation who is contacted by any cycling, anti-doping or government authority will be open and honest with that authority. In that context, we expect nothing short of 100% truthfulness, whatever the truth is, to the questions they are asked. If something should come out concerning illegal activities in the past, those involved have nothing to fear, the team said. As long as they express the truth about the past to the appropriate parties, they will continue to have a place in our organisation, and we will support them for living up to the promise we gave the world when we founded Slipstream Sports. I'm going to start crying.
Yeah, contrast that with David Muller, though.
Well, yeah, this was a separate piece on the DenverPost.com website where there were quotes from David Miller and Pat McQuaid on the Floyd Landis thing. Now, David Miller said he's reached the end of the road.
Might have been talking about Pat McQuaid, actually. It fits as well.
It does, actually. So you can have either in mind when you're listening to this. He's reached the end of the road and I just find it disgusting. He's a liar and a cheat. Actually, this is funny now. He's a liar and a cheat. And he has nothing left in cycling, so he just wants to burn the house down. If he stood up and manned up 4 years ago, he'd be racing in the Tour de France now. He'd have a different book out. He wouldn't have lost a penny. He'd be admired by young people. He would have a different life ahead of him. He'd be in a decent mental state. He'd be sober. And he'd be married.
Oh, here we go, actually. You've changed my opinion. This is a classic example of bad report. Because the clip I saw missed all the positive bits of the outcome that would have been if he'd been clean or been open 4 years ago, which actually turns the Miller quote around and makes it almost as good as Wachter's, not quite.
All right, you're obviously taking a different slant than I am.
Well, no, when I read it, it came out, and it was just the first part of that phrase. Essentially, it said he's a dirty doper, he's a liar, he wants to burn the house down, which I thought just reflected the old attitude of Omerta. Whereas if you look at the rest, what Miller's saying is, if he'd come out, it would have been a good thing. So, I'm sorry, I was wrong. Okay?
No, well, hang on. I'm just looking at this, putting both of those quotes together. The bit about, you know, he's reached the end of the road and I find it disgusting. And then the bit saying that, you know, here's what he would have been. I saw that as being, as I say, by putting both together, I saw that as being and a further kick. You know, look at the state that you're actually in because you've lost your wife, you're... seemingly through that quote alleging a drink problem.
Oh no, he has had a drink problem.
Yes. I'm just trying to be legal, staying on the right side of the law here. And talking about, you know, you would have been in the Tour de France, but now you're in the position that you're in. I took that as being fairly damning from Miller.
No, well, we can agree to disagree on that one. Yeah.
Pat McQuaid was also, as I mentioned, interviewed for this
piece. I really don't want to hear anything Pat McQuaid's got to say anymore. But, I mean, go on, I know you have to do it.
Okay, well, he says, and this is the bit that, I mean, there's lots from Pat McQuaid on this, but here's the bits that got me, and I pulled these out for a comment on the website. It's possible that there's certain elements, again, talking of Floyd Landis, it's possible there's certain elements of truth, but it's possible there are certain elements of lies. Therefore, that discredits everything he said.
That logically makes no sense at all.
No, I mean, as I put it, you know, that borders on not being part of the English language. Aye. If two sides of a grammatical equation are equally possible...
They don't invalidate the...
You can't just conclude therefore with any certainty.
That's not even worthy of argument, that comment.
Yeah, and he also said, talking about the race director, Michael White, he has nothing to hide and has a clear conscience.
Why is he talking about him?
Because he's been implicated in what Landis has said. But
it comes about, why is he defending Armstrong as well? You know, he should be defending the UCI.
Well, exactly. And how can Pat McQuaid state that with any certainty?
Well, he can't. He's talking about his bum.
Right. Shock move. This just in. The Batty Foundation pro cycling team has announced that they are parting ways with Floyd Landis.
A kill surprise.
Who'd have thought it?
All joking aside, he nearly killed that team. You know, there's sponsors running for the door. Ouch, who came in with Landis, have gone. And the team actually were moved. It was serious enough that they had to reassure people that they still had jobs. So this is the kind of short-term fallout. We don't know what the long-term fallout is going to go, but it's hardly a surprise that he's got his marching orders.
Yeah. I mean, it says here, due to the media-intensive environment, the team and Floyd Landis have decided to amicably part ways. We support his courage to come forward in an effort to facilitate a drug-free and fair sport. So that's kind of good. The Batty Foundation Pro Cycling Team will be moving forward without the continued support of Ouch Medical Centre due to the recent turbulent media environment, said the statement. We are extremely thankful to Dr. Brent Kay for his generous support and respect his decision to minimise involvement in the cycling world at this time. I think, you know, I bookmarked this because of the very real danger that exists if anything further comes from what Landis is alleging. You know, I talked to you about how cycling is fairly unique in that it has no gate receipts to rely on. It's not like soccer, it's not like American football or anything else.
If the sponsors run, the sport goes down.
There is no money. There is no money whatsoever. A quick question, actually, when we're thinking about football there, did the teams get a cut of jersey sales? When you buy a, I don't know, £60 Garmin Slipstream replica jersey,
I would think that's just a straight licensing fee. Mm. I mean, it's
I'm just thinking.
It's three steps away from the retail bit where I buy the jersey when I was in the shop, if you see what I mean. So I've no idea, but I would imagine it's a straight licensing fee.
Yeah, because I was just wondering, just on the lines of, you know, gate receipts and stuff, a lot of the money that comes in for Manchester United, for example, is through replica kit sales and so on and so forth. Another follow-up story we covered in recent weeks, and it looks like the Tour of Missouri, which had been hanging in the balance, will not go ahead this year.
Which is a shame.
It is a real shame. It says, yes, we have pulled out of the effort, said Chris Arenhalt, managing partner of Medalist Sports. Clearly the governor is not supportive, which means the tour will not be successful. In our opinion, the tour will be cancelled because you don't expect a change of heart from the governor. We are disappointed, yet grateful for the opportunity and proud of our results.
And it was good last year. I'm disappointed to see that it's gone. Conspiracy theorists might note that next year it leaves a big gap for the Tour of Colorado, which has more political clout behind it. But whatever it is, it's a shame, you know, that money was promised. There were letters promising the money. It's a race which has shown it's good for the area, and it's just gone now. It's bad.
Yeah, they're talking about somewhere a direct economic impact of more than $80 million over 3 years. It attracted 1.5 million spectators and estimated $38 million in tax revenue telecast international to viewers in 173 countries.
Can you say short-sighted politician?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, apparently this went on last year as well, where... a large proportion of the state funding for the race froze right before the start of the seven-day event. The funding came through in the final hour. It says the race costs roughly $3.3 million to run and cannot continue without the $1 million that annually comes from the state of Missouri.
Yeah.
I mean, as you kind of alluded to a moment ago, you know, it's harder to bring events back once they've gone.
Once it's gone, it's gone.
Now, we also discussed in the last few weeks the Gruber Assist and the possibility that some riders were using this kind of pedal assist technology to, and I quote, mechanically dope. Now, it seems that David Cassini, the one-time professional and current Italian TV commentator, is insisting that the rumours are indeed true.
I like Cassini as a rider. He was good. There's a really interesting video kicking about, I'll put a link to it, where they analyse Fabian Cancellara's performance in Paris-Roubaix and show that it's, you know, motorised. I now think this is going on. I genuinely think this is going on. Because as I said, you know, the title of the show a couple of weeks ago, you've got complete, you know, peace, I'll try that again, complete peace of mind when you pee in a bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly in something like Roubaix, it'd be easy to fake a reason for a bike change 10k before the end. The Cancellara video is quite laughable, though, because, well, most of it is, actually. The bit where it says, you know, he reaches to press a single button, he's just pressing the double tap shifter to change gear.
Mm-hmm.
But the bit where he attacks, you know, in the saddle, it does look suspiciously smooth and turbine-like. I mean, he gains speed quite impressively. So... whilst I'm not going to tar Fabian with any kind of brush, it's definitely out there.
Okay, I've got a slightly different take, which I'll come to in a second.
I'll tell you the other thing, thing that's interesting is that people have refuted the fact that it's out there by looking at the technical specs of the Gruber Assist, by saying, oh, you know, it doesn't do above 90 revs a minute, and it needs an external battery and that sort of thing. If you're... for the sake of argument, Saxo Bank, you know, I'm sure you can afford to pay somebody electrical to soup the thing up a wee bit and hide the battery in the seat tube. You know, the fact that there's a commercial product that does the job doesn't mean that the pros are using something that looks exactly like the retail release.
Yeah, and also you were talking, when we first mentioned this, that it may be an idea whose time is just so right because of the advent of DI2,
yeah,
where batteries on bikes are now suddenly de rigueur.
It quite tickles me, though. I mean, it's quite resourceful.
and
it's slightly less sorted than sticking a needle in your arm.
Yes, if nothing else, professional cyclists are resourceful.
There were cheats very early in the sport, particularly in Liège-Bastogne-Liège, which conveniently went from one city to the other and then back, where they'd get the train. You know, they'd ride the first 20k, yep, get the train, you know, appear at the turn, get back in the train, and then win by an hour or something. So, it's an idea with some heritage.
Okay, back to David Cassini here. He says, an agent sent me a message. It said, if you want to try the rigged bicycle, I can help. He gave me the whereabouts of the designer. I contacted him and he gave me the bike. There are no obvious e-bike protrusions. Nothing stands out. The buttons which operate the motor are hidden under the rubber brake levers, and it's unbelievable. You push the button and this gets the bicycle up to speed. No need to pedal. Just make it look as though you're pedaling. You can ride at 50 kilometres an hour without forcing, without fatigue. It says the motor produces a low hum, but which is not loud enough for bystanders to hear, especially when you're in the middle of a pack of riders. It says the mechanism saves at least 50 watts, and that's huge. It's worse than doping. It's a motorcycle in the peloton.
Fantastic.
Right, okay.
Particularly in a time trial, because, you know, I'm thinking about having a custom time trial frame built with a 31.6 seat tube. You put a disc on the back, the noise of the disc would drown out the motor. It's perfect.
Yeah. Okay, here's my cynical conspiracy theory. It's possible. All of this is starting to make me wonder whether we are being subjected to a very, very clever marketing strategy.
Oh, I'm buying it. So it's worked.
So it's worked. I mean, the best way to get to do marketing in the 21st century is get people talking about what it is you do.
Like Rita, with their...
The UCI video is banning the illegal use of horny bikes or whatever they said.
Erotic geometry.
Erotic geometry, that was it. And I didn't know about Gruber Assist until 2 weeks ago. Now everybody's talking about it.
If it is, it's damn clever and they deserve respect.
Okay. As I say, conspiracy theory,
go and watch that video. And as I say, most of the stuff with Cancellara is complete crap. But watch where he accelerates and tell me it doesn't look like an electric motor. Now, Fabian's so powerful and so smooth, it would look like that anyway. But if you're a conspiracy theorist, there's some grist for your mill.
Yeah, certainly. Okay, I don't know where... I didn't know where to start writing notes for this next story. And in fact, it's not even a story. It's the amazing rim rack, which you, my esteemed colleague, found on the Instructables website.
Rim and rack, they're two words you don't find in the same sentence very often.
No, certainly not.
This is actually, it's cool as mince. It's a very, very sturdy rack made from a knackered old rim, which will carry anything, including people. But I'm more, rather than look at this thing individually, I was actually more impressed with the Instructables site and everything they do with bikes. What a bunch of barmy folk that are out there looking for new ways to do things.
Oh, the ingenuity of people never fails to amaze me.
You know, using press fit hose connectors as trailer hitches and that sort of thing. So the rim rack itself looks like a practical thing. And it in lots of third world countries, you see innovation like this and reuse of parts. But have a look at the Instructables site and have a look at the bike section. And, you know, it doesn't have to be carbon fibre and posh to be cool. There's some nice stuff on here.
Yeah, there is. I mean, there's everything from, you know, how to make your own panniers, quick-release hitches on trailers, the trailers themselves, just general how-tos. It's a great resource.
How to look cool on a bike as well.
Yes, I mean...
I'm going to read that one.
Now, Paris has announced a new 4-year bike plan that will be presented to the City Council in the next month. The new plan calls for increasing the numbers of bike lanes from 273 to 435 miles by 2014. Adding bike boxes to many intersections and adding 1,000 new bike parking spaces each year.
Tell you, Google Chrome's getting very impressive now. Because I've started...
Sorry, did I fall asleep for 5 minutes and we started talking about something else?
Well, no, it's got lots of add-ins and one of them is it integrates Google Translate. So if I put in a foreign page, it auto-detects the language and then translates it into English for me. Which is useful because you keep picking French things and my French is rubbish. This looks very impressive, actually. You know, a dedicated bike calling centre beside the Bastille. Up in the Vallibe, the introduction of electric bikes, the introduction of better parking facilities for bikes, the expansion of their no-car areas on a Sunday and on holidays. I hate to be a cliche, but it's joined up thinking.
Yeah, I specifically bookmarked this because in recent months there's been a lot of criticism of the Vallibe system and how it was working in this kind of private public partnership.
Yeah. Even that's just part of it though, the infrastructure that's going in here, you know, bike lanes, bike tours for, you know, so that you can get guided tours, scenic routes which go right through the heart of the city. I love Paris. It would be a reason for me to go back.
They are all insane right now. There's still... They are like other group
else
of people.
In France.
No, exactly. They're a separate race. You know, they've still got that Bastille mentality. They're crazy people.
It's impressive.
It certainly is. Well, the Giro d'Italia, of course, wasn't the only race to be contested in recent weeks. Patrick Cunan, president of Advanced Sports Inc., has won the annual bike versus car versus transit race in Philadelphia, beating the competition by nearly 6 minutes.
Duh. I mean, we live in a nice wee place, which, you know, you can walk around, never mind cycle around. But when I lived in Edinburgh, the bike was always the fastest option.
You told me stories before about, you know, I think how you got into cycling was...
My mate beat a bus.
Being a bus, yeah.
Andy from Amsterdam, have a drink.
Have a drink.
beat a bus, and I thought, oh, that's cool. Because we used to climb together, and that's how initially I got into cycling. And when I used to commute into the bike co-op... over a distance of 22 miles, I was quicker than a bus. And what happened, of course, is it's the tortoise and the hare. The bus was really quick into the outskirts of the town. But then a bike is so much faster. You gather all that time back. Mm. And even now, you get a bus, you roughly know when you're going to get there. You take the car, you might hit traffic, so you know, you roughly know when you're going to get somewhere. Even now on a bike, I'm never more than 5 minutes outside my expected arrival time to a destination, so it's reliable as well. This just confirms what, if more people grasped, would really build the momentum for urban cycling and for commuting. So, you know, well done, but it's hardly a surprise.
No. Cunnan wore a business suit to prove the point that biking is an activity suitable for workers who must dress for the job. He says, "I pedal to work nearly every day, so I know the benefits of getting around the city by bike. In busy cities like Philadelphia, it's simply the fastest way to get short distances, especially at rush hour." The race started at 8 a.m. in North Philadelphia at Frankford and Master Streets and travelled 4 miles to 15th and Market Streets, finishing near the City Hall. Cunnan finished with a time of 13 minutes and 20 seconds. The car driver arrived at the finish line in 19 minutes 20, and the public transit rider came in at 24 minutes and 9 seconds.
Yeah, and I mean, note that when it really offends me to see cyclists flaunting highway laws. We've talked about this before. So even obeying the rules, it's much quicker. So, you know, get on with it, folks.
Yes. We may be preaching to the choir here, but anyway, it's worth noting.
Slightly hypocritical, because I drove the mile and a half over here to record the podcast, but, you know.
Anyway, those in doubt as to whether there is any business benefit to supporting cycling financially can look no further than a recently released report by the UK Department for Transport, which concluded that investment in cycling more than pays for itself by a factor of 3 to 1.
So why isn't there more of it?
Because I don't think people believe that.
No, I don't think they do either. I think there's a perception that it's wasted money. And a lot of the time, it is because it's poorly thought out. But, forget about this. Factor in things like cost of the health service, that sort of thing, because people are going to be fitter if they commute. Over a long period, the bike wins hands down. Yeah. You know, financially, it's just sensible.
And they're saying that if the benefits are sustained over 30 years, the benefit-to-cost ratio may be as high as 5 or even 6 to 1. And these findings come from the results of the first 3 years of the Cycling Demonstration Towns programme, which has been running in England. The six towns also saw the proportion of pupils cycling to school more than double, increasing by 126%, achieved through the Bike It Officers funding by the Bike Hub and Cycling England.
Yeah, it just makes sense.
Now, the Seoul Bicycle Design Competition for 2010 has been launched, which is open to applicants from every country in the world, professionals, students and design enthusiasts. So if you fancy sharing in the £46,000 prize money, you should get designing now.
Aye, I mean, there's not much to say about this other than highlight it, because yeah, it gave us lots of cool bikes to talk about last year. So in the interest of providing content for the show, get stuck in.
There are three categories here: cycle design, cycle fashion and accessory design, and cycling infrastructure. There are also two entry levels, adult or adolescent, of course, that split being at 18 years or over. Various prizes taken from a cash pool of £46,000, as I mentioned, and winning designs will be published in the Seoul Cycle Design Competition catalogue, which will be distributed among design firms and organisations in Korea and indeed other countries. Now, up next is the Fabric Horse, which, as the website says, is made from a combination of black waxed canvas and nylon, and it is, as they say, one simple bag.
I tell you, this bag, the classic black wax canvas, is what drew me to this site, because I love wax canvas. I mean, I'm quite often seen wandering around with a wax canvas hat, which would look more appropriate if it had corks hanging from it. And I've got a waxed canvas jacket, which I can't wear now because it's so full of holes. But as a fabric, it's great. You know, it looks cool as it wears. You can reproof it. And it's really durable. So I thought, this looks like a cool bag. And it does. I mean, it's just a simple rucksack which combines Cordura and black wax canvas. Then I started looking at the site. And they're made in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. What a bunch of nutters.
I mean, okay.
They make some of the coolest and daftest stuff I've ever seen in my life. They make cycling utility belts, which I've got things like a lock holster and places to put your tools so you can look like a cycling member of the Village People.
See, I was, as soon as you say utility belt, I think Batman, and I'm immediately interested.
Well, one of the utility belts is called Roaring Teal and Red Superhero.
So I'm there.
They make spats.
Way!
Which I'd actually wear. They're quite stylish. They're very cool. But then it gets slightly mad because it gets down to headdresses.
Yeah, because there's nothing at all mad about spats.
Headdresses, they've got one, the one of the features called the Burger Bride, which is a woman with a picture of a burger and some lace on her head. And then we get to costumes, where and then installations and prototypes. So I was drawn into this strange world by a really cool looking and very simple bag, but this company are just mental. So go and have a look at the site. The stuff's not cheap, but it looks well made, and some of the stuff, like the lock holster, actually looks really practical. But there's clearly a need for some medication here.
Spats.
Blimey. No, they're really cool. They do waxed canvas spats, which are brilliant. I mean, I'm having a pair.
Well, look forward to a picture of that on.
Watch for me in Eurobike with my waxed canvas spats and my kilt.
You're not going with a kilt. Sticking with bags, but this time a pannier, we've got the GT54 from Arkel, which according to the company is simply the best touring pannier available.
And it might well be, actually. This is... I've got to be honest, I went to this site because they started following us on Twitter. I'd never heard of them.
And yeah, proves it works.
I'm quite ashamed that I'd never heard of them, because they've got a range of panniers where they've got the faith in their product. They're charging the proper price for the item. I mean, this is nearly $400 for a pair.
Yeah.
But the thought that's going into these things, you know, there's compartments, a place for everything and everything in its place. They've got, you know, that horrible thing where you're trying to work out where to put your tent poles, you know, and they're sticking up your bum as you're pedalling or they're falling off. There's a dedicated tent pole holder in the panniers. Any of these products would get you around the world in style. I'm really impressed with this company. Go and have a look at the site. That this GT54 pannier I chose because it's their flagship product, but there's loads of other good stuff there. Arco bags look nice.
Yeah. There's also a removable tube that fits on the side of the pannier as well for the tent itself, which I thought was a great idea. One thing, though, it says it has a convertible fanny pack.
Yeah, no, that's two America. Countries divided
yeah,
by...
Yeah, note to America, stop using the term fanny.
Pants as well, actually.
Yeah, in every other English-speaking country in the world, this does not mean what you think it means. Please stop using it.
It was always a laugh in the shop, actually. When I was at the bike co-op... Cannondale, they made some of the best what we call bum bags in the world, which actually doesn't sound much more attractive.
No,
but and the labelling was really, really obvious, and it used, you know, selling a fanny pack was always fun.
Yeah, these, as John says, are $378.95 for the pair, and are available from arkel-od.com.
They make some really cool racks as well, actually. I mean, just go and have a look at the site; it's a nice site.
Yeah, now a whole host of products now from a company called Brem M, who specialise in bits of kit for fixies.
Fixies are getting quite hip. I think I might. Has this been a trend?
I believe it has. Old people like us don't know about such things, but. Very popular with the kids.
I'm actually quite... I'm 47-year-old. You know, I've got no style whatsoever. And I'm quite fancying a pimped-out, colour-matched fixie for scooting around Peebles. There's something wrong with this show. This is apparently Massey, who, you know, you were talking to your internet friend Tim Jackson and the spokesman at the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And it's their fixie parts line. And it's just cool kit. I mean, there's nothing technically stunning about it. You know, there's nothing that makes me go, this is a real move forward in bicycle manufacture. Just nice colours.
Yep. Yeah, I can't agree or disagree with that. It just, as you say,
I tell you, the reason
nice
I highlighted
stuff.
It is it's the first time, except when we talked about wheel tags very early in the Velocast, it's the first time I've suddenly thought, actually, I quite fancy a shocking pink bike. So
there must be something in the weather.
The Velocast.
Something
just,
in the water, rather.
It's just a kind of record of my descent into madness.
Now, you can find out more at brevm.com. Now, a story that gave my feet no pleasure whatsoever, and the news that Eurobike has announced that 1,009 companies have already booked stands at the show, with the number expected to rise in the final few months.
We're actually having an extra day at the show this year, aren't we?
We are.
That's a bucket load of folk to go and speak to.
Yes, the Eurobike project manager Stefan Reisinger said, in order to meet the large demand for exhibition space, we have expanded Hall A3 to open up additional trade show areas. Oh my God.
You're going to have to buy some running shoes, son.
No, I'm going to get, what do you call them? The Segway. I'm going to get a Segway.
We've been quite upfront about asking for money for Eurobike, but this number just shows why we want to be there. You know, there's no other place where we can get the overview of the industry and the product that you get when there's over a thousand exhibitors in one space. And in 2 days last year, I mean, traditionally what I do is I walk the show the first day and decide what I want to look at the next day in detail. You know, whether it's for buying or talking to people about it for Velocast or whatever. First day last year, I was just overwhelmed. You know, I saw some cool stuff, but it was just too much. So instead of our normal 2 day jaunt, we're going to try and do 3 days this year. And I'm really excited, you know, because genuinely there isn't another venue where you can get the in-depth overview of what's happening in the industry than Friedrichshafen.
Yeah. As the story says, over 1,000 exhibitors already signed up from 42 countries with an international participation of 68%. Over 100,000 square metres in 14 trade show halls, and on the western and eastern open air grounds, the amount of exhibitor space has soared to a new dimension.
I'm actually want to do a feature on Taiwan Town this year. Taiwan
sounds crazy.
I mean, there's just all these Far Eastern companies which just make amazing stuff, and they've all got tiny wee booths with sweeties on them for some reason. They're always offering you sweeties. But, you know, help us get to this show. This gives you some idea of the coverage that the shows after Eurobike will help produce.
Finally, before we get to some picks, let's look at the Ruben from Traitor Cycles, which the company say was designed as an all-weather about-town commuter.
I tell you, this came as a result of my mindless surfing. You know, it's late at night, you can't get to sleep, so you just go on Tinternet and wander about looking at, you know, bike porn. We've talked about this kind of bike quite often, and it's, you know, it's the perfect bike for Scotland and Britain. It's essentially a road bike adapted so it works perfectly with disc brakes. You know, we've talked about Lightpimer's Parley. We've talked about this kind of bike all the time, but this Traitor, have a look at the site. There's really stylish bikes, and the function on this one, there's nothing about it I'd change, which says a lot for it.
You mentioned the disc brakes. There's also top tube cable routing as well.
Yeah, and really nice bar end shifters. The lovely Cane Creek levers, which mimic the shape of the old Campag levers. Nice honey brown saddle. It's just a stylish bike, but more important than that, it shows you can have a bike that will fit the purpose. You know, it'll do everything an urban bike needs to do in horrible weather and still looks damn stylish.
Right, now I think it's probably time for some picks of the week. Am I going first or are you?
Nah, you go first. I went first last week.
Okay, well, I'll be honest. I was kind of struggling for a pick this week until you posted your link to the amazing rim racks. So I'm going to go back to Instructables for my pick, which is how to build your own bamboo bike.
No, that is cool. I hadn't seen that one.
I had a look through because you said, you know, I want to talk about Instructables and you know, the bike stuff that they do there. So I had a look through to see what else I could find. There's even a how to build your own carbon frame, which I'm not going to touch, but we've talked about bamboo bikes before. And in fact, there was
at Noah's,
exactly. And we dribbled at a lot of them and how cool they were. And I thought, this looks interesting.
So you're going to the garden centre then?
Yes, I think it might be. There's a step-by-step guide, as you would expect from Instructables.com, and it shows you all the materials you need. Now, obviously, there is a certain amount of skill required here. You've got to cut the bamboo, there's heat treating with a blowtorch, and there's the epoxy to glue it all together.
Yeah, like, I can cope with that. I foresee a bike-making factory in Chapel Hill Farm. We could sell them for a fortune and brand them as Velocast bikes.
You know, it may be a good idea. His time has come. All joking aside, to borrow your phrase for a minute, this looks like the kind of thing that most of us could probably have a go at, and you're going to end up with, if the picture on this on the page is anything to go by, a very, very cool looking bamboo bike.
No, this is super cool. I mean, this is the bicycle equivalent, a kit car building.
You could be
working away in your garage over the winter and have a bike to ride for the summer. I'm doing this.
I thought you might. Well, that's my pick of the week, how to build your own bamboo bike.
My pick of the week is children.
Your pick of the week is children?
Yeah.
I'm now more frightened than I've possibly ever been while recording this show.
I tell you, there's a couple of things that have made this spring to my mind this week. And Springheel 1970 on Twitter posted a video link to a race that his son Fabian was riding. And the video started, and the first person that I saw before the riders came by was the manager of Miller's Country Store in Peebles, Brian Beattie, a man who crashes altogether too much. You don't want to be near Brian. And I thought, oh, there's Brian. And then I saw loads of Peebles folk. And, you know, Nick Springhill 1970 spends apparently nearly all of his time driving his talented young son to races. Brian's one of the Peebles crew who, along with particularly Stuart Gillis and Ian Grant, have turned essentially what was your standard old kind of Jobs for the Boys cycling club into one of the leading developers of, you know, junior cycling in Scotland, the One Awards. And then another of our listeners, Nicholas Day, and what a bizarre way to spell Nicholas, by the way. I mean, I'm sure it's authentic in some country, but lovely bloke, talks to us quite a lot on Twitter, sent me a link to his school, the Forest School Cycling Club, who, along with you know, their local cycling club and British Cycling's Go Ride Venture, are working hard to develop junior cyclists and bring them on and make them enjoy racing. So what I wanted to say is, well done to these guys. You're all my pick of the week, because while we get cynical and bitter and rant about the UCI and go on about doping, you know, Nick, the two Nicks, Ian, Brian Beattie, you know, the endless unnamed people, Stuart Gillis, are working hard at the proper grassroots of the sport, you know, where children can learn enthusiasm for cycling, learn to race fairly, learn values that means if they do get good enough, and I mean, looking at young Fabian, it's entirely possible he could turn pro. Then they're starting with some sense of moral compass, you know, some way of bringing a fresh aspect to the sport where hopefully in 10, 15 years, we don't need to worry about doping so much.
So well put. And that's exactly why we rant and we rave about doping and the UCI and everything else attendant to it, is because we don't want to have to anymore.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, that's the kind of thing that Greg LeMond was talking about, that, you know, he talks about these kind of things because he's got a son now, and he never wanted his son to be in the position that
he has to refuse drugs.
That he has to refuse it, yeah. Well, I think that's probably all we have time for this week. Thanks so much for listening and staying subscribed. All manner of ways to contact us can be found on our website at www.velocast.co.uk, where you can also find out how to donate or subscribe. Don't forget that you can order Velocast team jerseys in the finest merino sports wool manufactured for us by Shut Velo Repeat at our website. And we'd like to point out that we have to close the ordering on the 4th of June for those.
Yeah, I mean, we want people to get their jerseys in a reasonably timely fashion. And there will be other batches. I mean, we're not saying buy it now and you'll never find one. But if you want one from the initial production run, midnight on Friday the 4th, I'm pulling the plug.
Okay, joking.
That sounds a bit dramatic.
It did. Very, very dramatic. A further reminder about our Eurobike 2010 project, which will enable us to cover the biggest and most important bicycle trade show in the world. If you enjoy the show, please consider leaving a comment or review in iTunes, as this really helps other people discovering it. Hope you all have a great week, and can't wait to speak to you all again next week for another edition of the Velocast.